You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Listeners, I've got a very, very special interview, author interview for you today, and that's with Brad Meltzer, who you're familiar with. We did the I Am books that he introduced to us that he does. Remember, one was about Walt Disney and the other about Marie Curie, and he's also done The Conspiracy to Kill George Washington, which is one of those real gems of history that he had uncovered. And he's got another gem of history he's uncovered here with the Lincoln Conspiracy. And that book comes out, I believe it's May 5th. And so we wanted to say hello, Brad Meltzer. It's great to have you with us.
It's so great to be back. And I know we've talked about some of the kids' books, but now we get to talk about the adult nonfiction and the real history. And I just really appreciate you supporting history in all its forms.
We enjoy doing it. And that's one of the reasons that I do podcasting. I know it's one of the reasons you write and author the great books that you do. It's given people a real education and the backstory, especially in this case, of what really happened. You've got an incredible, dramatic story here of how the Pinkerton Detective Agency stepped in and saved Lincoln's life. What a story. And I'm hoping you can give our listeners a taste of it. How did you discover it? How did you find this story?
I found it when we were working, I believe, on our History Channel TV show on Decoded. We were doing an episode on the Lincoln Conspiracy. And I think that was where it kind of first came on my radar. But it's a story you never forget once you hear it, right? Because we all know that in 1865, Abraham Lincoln is shot by John Wilkes Booth. And it's, you know, the most famous assassination, arguably, until JFK. But what we don't know, and most of us don't know, is that at the start of his presidency, just as he was elected, Abraham Lincoln was going from his home in Springfield, Illinois, to be sworn in as the 16th president in Washington, D.C. And on his way to the inauguration, they were going to make trips through Philadelphia and some major cities, shake hands along the way. There were no cars back then. You either traveled there by horse to go from Illinois to Washington, or, of course, you took the train. And that was what Abraham Lincoln was doing with his family and with and his staff. And what no one knew was that there was a secret society plotting to kill him. Because what happened was, to get from Illinois to Washington, you got to go through Baltimore. However you take the train transfers through Baltimore. And Baltimore at the time was a slave state. They hated Abraham Lincoln there. And this secret society, an offshoot of the Knights of the Golden Circle, was plotting to murder Abraham Lincoln when he came through Baltimore. And as you said, the Pinkerton detectives, Alan Pinkerton, his detective agency, got involved. He brought in Kate Warren, America's first female private eye in all of history, and she gets involved, and the rest of the Pinkertons infiltrate this incredible secret society and save the day. And I won't ruin exactly how, but it's on a speeding train in the middle of the night, everyone in disguise, and they save Abraham Lincoln's life. And that is the story of the Lincoln Conspiracy. What we obviously do is show you how it all happened and almost happened. Right down to how Abraham Lincoln almost died before he was even sworn in.
You've really done a nice job developing Lincoln's character and bringing up some of the points that maybe history hasn't taught us about his youth and how he educated himself. I'm thinking of his famous speech he gave at Gettysburg when he told the crowd that no one would remember what he said that day. Was he right or wrong with regard to that?
Yeah, it's one of the endings that we put in the book, as you saw that line. It's, you know, I remember writing when we wrote that line, is that, you know, he truly says, no one's going to remember what I say now. Of course, we remember what he said, because his speech was, I believe, 281 words, something like that, 280 something words. But the most important were the five words at the end: all men are created equal. And we don't just remember because it's on the Lincoln Memorial. We remember because it's what America stands for. It's what we've come to stand for. It's what we need to stand for. And I think, you know, what you see, and you hit it right at the beginning of that question, it's very easy to tell a titillating story to say Abraham Lincoln almost died, and here's the guys who tried to kill him. And here are the secret detective agency that jumped in, and here's the group that was, you know, how close they got. But what was very important to Josh Menchini, who helped work on this book with me, my co-writer here, was that we really made you learn and know Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
If you don't care and learn, and because Abraham Lincoln, and the same thing when we did the secret plot to kill George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington are arguably the two most famous Americans who ever lived. But oddly, we somehow don't know that much about them as people. We know they're on the $1 bill and the $5 bill. We know their statues and their monuments. We know all those things. But it was important to me, it's those little details. So when Abraham Lincoln in 1860 is waiting for the results, and he's waiting to see, did I win the presidency? Did I lose the presidency? He's playing what's basically a game of handball.
Yes.
Behind his building. It's the most human thing of all, right? Abraham Lincoln just playing handball because he's good at it, because he's just a big guy with big hands. And that's what he's doing when they're like, sir, you're going to be the president. And I love those details. I love the detail that before he leaves, when he goes back to Herndon, to his law partner, to say a final goodbye. And what he says to this partner who he's worked with for so many years before he leaves for the presidency, the one thing he wants to tell him before he leaves. And I love that moment where before he leaves to go to Washington, he takes a trip home to basically see his stepmom, who he loved, adored. And his stepmom says to herself that when he leaves, I know I'm never going to see him again. She has that premonition that he's going to die. She fears that he's going to die. And she's absolutely right. And, you know, even down to the details of Lincoln's son, who loses and leaves the inaugural address because he's in charge of carrying it, and how it gets lost. Those are the things that make us who we are. It, you know, if you woke up an average American today and you said in the middle of the night, I woke you up and said in the middle of the night, anyone, pick anyone in America, and said, what did Lincoln do? You'd wake up and go, free the slaves, free the slaves. You'd say that. You just blurt it out.
Yeah.
And we all know that. But, you know, your accomplishments are not who you are. It's the details of your life. It's what you do with it. It's how you talk to people and how you interact with people and those things you love to do, whether it's play handball or go and say thank you to the woman who took a chance on you all those years ago and was kind to you. That really show you the measure of someone's character. And it was very important that we really get to see that in Abraham Lincoln when you read The Lincoln Conspiracy.
Yeah. One of the things I like about your writing, yours and Josh's writing, is that a lot of the scenes, like that scene where he's playing handball when he finds out he's going to be president, you write as if it's almost as if it's a script for a movie, and you help me to visualize these great gems, these great true moments in people's life, and that's what makes your books different. I really do enjoy the way you present history. I try to do that with audio in the course of my podcast, and I look up to the achievements that you've had in terms of your books. I find them just great reads for that reason. Just wanted to compliment you on that.
No, John, I appreciate it. Listen, you know, what we both do in different forms and in different mediums, obviously, is we're telling a story.
Yeah.
You got to tell a good story. You know, I could just say, here's how he almost died. Here's the train he was on. Here's the time he left the station. Here's how they got him. Here, you know, and all you have is an encyclopedia entry. That's all you get. But if I tell you, and the guy who wants to kill him, when we first find him, here he is on a dark night in a fancy hotel in the basement of the building where he is Baltimore's most famous barber, cutting hair, talking to wealthy people, and whispering the greatest secrets in their ears. Now you're listening. This is the man who tries to kill Abraham Lincoln. And to me, those are the best parts, right? Is when you get to those details where you feel like you're watching that suspenseful movie, where you feel like you're there. Because, you know, I think all of us, we're just filled with the cliches of history. You know, Abraham Lincoln's like somehow sitting in a log cabin reading by candlelight. And yes, those moments happen, but so did moments of him playing handball, and so did moments of him, you know, worrying and stressing. And one of the things we were, you know, very important to us as Josh and I looked at this, and full credit to Josh, because he was the first one who kind of, as we talked about it, was we're catching Lincoln and the Lincoln conspiracy at a time where the Civil War, I mean, he's elected 3 days after his election. South Carolina passes their first resolution that they intend to secede from the Union. 3 days they give him. Three. That's it. It was fascinating to me that in the South, no one voted for Abraham Lincoln, not just because they hated him, but they hated him so much they didn't put him on the ballot. No one in the South voted for him because they didn't put him on the ballot. They just were like, this guy's terrible. We're not even going to put him on there. There was no way to in some states. And it's a time where America was so deeply divided. Whatever side you were on, you hated the other side. You thought they were terrible, horrible people. John, does that sound familiar to you? Because it's right. It's exactly where we are now as a culture.
No, exactly.
And so it was very important to us as we painted this picture that it wasn't just, here are the facts of the murder plot to kill Abraham Lincoln, but the Lincoln Conspiracy as a book would also be about how and where we are now and how do we get out of where we are now.
I would like you to tell, I don't think we'd be giving up the plot, if you could tell us the story of Kate Warne.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about wherever you want to go. So Kate Warne is this young woman, and the Pinkerton Detective Agency, you know, Alan Pinkerton is this kind of enigmatic, famous figure through history. You know, lives in Chicago and in the corruption of Chicago, builds this private detective agency, of course, Chicago famously corrupt, and hires, you know, starts himself kind of solving his own little crimes, just like Murder, She Wrote, you know, like in his own little hometown. He's, you know, helps the police with one case, they hire him for another, and slowly he starts hiring other detectives, always men. And one day, a woman comes into his detective agency. Which again, at the time, never happened. Unheard of. The gall of a woman coming in just would never, ever happen. And in walks a woman named Kate Warne. And Kate Warne, you know, I actually knew her because we're actually doing a story on her in one of our kids' books because she's that incredible and I think she, you know, is amazing. But what I love about her story is she basically comes in and sits down and is like, you know, I'm ready to go. I think you need to hire me. And it's a time when nobody is hiring women. And he kind of takes her, he looks at her and tries to kind of figure her out and sees that she's kind of friendly and whatever. But what he also sees is that she's really likable and she makes you trust her. And then in that moment, Alan Pinkerton, whether it's because he's, you know, pushed forward on the gender issue or just because he's selfish and says, I'm going to be able to get a good case solved out of it, realizes, you know what? There are a lot of people who are going to want to talk to this woman. They're going to want to spill their guts to this woman.
Mm-hmm. That they would never talk the same way to a man.
Never. No man would ever get, no one, it would never happen.
And that was her selling point, and he bought it, and he was right.
And that's the thing, is he takes a chance. And he's absolutely right. And that, to me, is one of the great moments that gets lost to history. Is, you know, it's not because he's like, oh, we got to hire a woman, or oh, I got to feel this way or that way. You know, it's this newly hired detective to investigate the case. And she winds up going in and talking to women on the case, talking to men on the case, talking to people who are on the inside. And soon after he hires her, he hires another woman who comes on. Some say she's the first mixed-race private detective. Actually, no one can really prove what her race was. But he then hires another female detective because he realizes, wait a minute, this is actually going to work. And what I love about her is just that she's this kind of unknown footnote of history. But as you see, without ruining the ending, she's absolutely responsible for saving Abraham Lincoln's life. She's one. I mean, one of my favorite scenes in the whole book, without ruining it, is that moment where Kate Warne has to go to Abraham Lincoln's room and talk about what, you know, and you know, present these ideas and talk about these ideas of what's about to happen. And the code name they give him and all the stuff that happens when they're going to hide Abraham Lincoln is just priceless.
Can we talk about the plot?
Yeah, let's talk about the plot. Okay. So one of my favorite parts of the book, of course, is when you get to pull apart the actual plot. And there's this wonderful moment that, you know, historians will tell you it's only been verified by Alan Pinkerton. So I always put that caveat in there because, you know, everything in the book, you'll see 50 pages of footnotes when you read the Lincoln Conspiracy.
Yes.
We love to document things from both sides. So, you know, it's not just one person exaggerating. We make sure, you know, the only thing is this one moment, but it's one of my favorite in the whole book. So we have to talk about it. Is this kind of candlelight meeting in the secret society. And I can see you on video right now. So I can see you smiling the same way that I'm smiling. Cause this was just such one of the craziest scenes in the Lincoln Conspiracy. And in the middle, what happens is, there's a secret. I mean, I guess you just have to say there's just a secret meeting, literally like right out of the Simpsons or the Freemasons or the, you know, like, and what happens is, you know, they have secret passwords and secret code names, but on this night, what they're doing is they're drawing lots. And the lots that they're going to draw is for, if you draw the shortest straw, to kind of simplify what happens in that moment, the one who draws the shortest straw is going to be the one who pulls the trigger and kills Abraham Lincoln. And the reason that they're drawing straws is because if John, you and I are in there and I know that it's you, oh, John, you know, John's the one who's going to do it. If I get arrested, then I can rat it all out and ruin the whole plan. So it's all done randomly. No one knows who's going to draw the shortest straw. No one knows who drew it. No one knows who the killer is. You keep it to yourself and you all leave there solemnly. And one of the great parts of the book to me and the plot to kill Abraham Lincoln is that moment where you find out in the Lincoln Conspiracy that it wasn't there wasn't just one short straw. And I won't ruin the ending, but there's more than one. And that means there's more than one killer gunning for Abraham Lincoln that night. And I love that plot. And so the plot is very simple. When Abraham Lincoln comes down, he's coming from Philadelphia. He's coming to Baltimore. He's going to change trains in Baltimore. There's all the different railroads back then. It wasn't just like, you know, one railroad. So you would land in one station in Baltimore and you'd have to literally walk half a mile or walk a mile to another station that would take you north or south, depending on where else you wanted to go. And to get to Washington, D.C., you had to change stations. There just was no way around
it. And he required a police escort.
And he had a police escort. And worse than anything, they published all of his, you know, just like they do today, but, you know, back then a kind of bigger deal because there was no Secret Service protecting him. They published all of the times and changes of his trains and when he was going to move and who he's going to move with and where he was going to be. Everyone knew. So there's no Secret Service that exists. He does have a police escort, so there's obviously attention around him. He's also the biggest guy in the room. You can't miss him. He's gigantic. But there isn't Secret Service doing casing early in the, you know, and making sure and who's there and no metal detectors to keep people out. You know, there's no way to stop it. And the plan is when Abraham Lincoln comes to town and he walks from one train station to the other, or he drives, whichever way he goes, that in that passing, they're going to murder him. They're going to shoot him. Pull the gun. The one who draws a short straw is going to drop him dead right there. And that's the plan. And one of my favorite moments in the whole book is Alan Pinkerton tells Abraham Lincoln, has to finally tell him, I should say it's Alan Pinkerton who tells him what the plan is. And says, listen, they're coming to kill you. Here's how they're going to do it. Here's what's going to happen. You know, I know you're in Philadelphia tomorrow, but you need to skip the trip to Philadelphia. And instead, you got to come with us. And we're going to take you to safety. We're going to get you out of here early. And you'll get there early in the middle of the night. And that's what Lincoln should do. He should just get out of there, skip the trip in Philly, and it doesn't matter, and save your life. And Lincoln, in one of these great, again, little moments, says, I'm not missing my event in Philadelphia. And Alan Pinkerton says, what are you talking about? What's in Philadelphia? And what Abraham Lincoln is planning to do in Philadelphia is he's going to Independence Hall, to where the Constitution was signed, because he is going to honor his hero on the birthday of George Washington. George Washington is one of Abraham Lincoln's heroes, and he wants to honor his birthday. And so come hell or high water, he says, I'm going to Philadelphia. And one of my favorite moments is, when he gets to Philadelphia, we now know, and Abraham Lincoln knows, that there's a plot to kill him. And when he gives his speech there, we found the contents of the speech. We're like, let's look at the speech, see if there's anything interesting in it. And when you look at the contents of the speech, as it says in the book, and I'm going to paraphrase here because my words will never be as good as Abraham Lincoln's verbatim, but he says to him, Abraham Lincoln says to the crowd that we must stand together, we must be united, and I'd rather be assassinated if we weren't.
Yeah, that was an amazing
find.
It seems
like just a way to, you know, it's just an incredible line that when you read the Lincoln conspiracy, just takes on a whole new meaning, because Abraham Lincoln knows that there actually is a plot to kill him at that exact moment. I won't tell you what happens from there, but needless to say, that's where the chase begins as they finally sneak him away from his big event in Philadelphia and try to get him to Washington, D.C. in the middle of the night.
What lasting impression did Abraham Lincoln give you personally after doing all this research and really getting to know him?
We'll return to Brad Meltzer and the Lincoln Conspiracy right after this message from our sponsors.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, back to our show.
You know, I'll tell you what. I think that what struck me about Abraham Lincoln and why I think he's the most amazing president we've had, and I love George Washington, you know my love of George Washington, but I think, you know, George Washington was fighting for this country and certainly fighting for what we wanted to be a country, fighting for our troops and ourselves and our nation. Abraham Lincoln is fighting for a different kind of right. It's a moral right. It's a right for other people that, truthfully, Abraham Lincoln's life will go on just fine. Whether slavery is finished or not, he's going to be fine. And it's, to me, the far greater measure of a person who, when they're at the top of the ladder and they could have everything and they're flying high, will still look back down and give a hand and put a hand out to help other people get up. That's the measure of true success. And what struck me about Abraham Lincoln, and I think the reason it's possible, you know, I thought in my head before we started the book that Abraham Lincoln was just the best president. Of course, he's the best president, and for all the reasons we all think. But his decision to issue the Emancipation Proclamation, his decision to decide that slavery was not going to stand in that way, is not fully formed in his head when he's elected by any stretch.
Yeah, there's still a long process ahead. That was
massive,
a tough political decision.
He gets elected and the slaves come free and there we go. And it isn't simple, like it's, you know, some third grade children's book, but it's not. And it's a real progression. And it's a progression that's built from when he's little. He remembers seeing slaves when he's, you know, people who were enslaved when he's younger. And he says he never forgot seeing them in chains. He never shook it. It always got to him. It always shook him. And what I think is really struck me about him is the reason that it takes people like Frederick Douglass to push him along. It takes obviously circumstances to push him along. A lot of great thinkers like Frederick Douglass and others to push him along. But I believe that the reason that Abraham Lincoln also is able to pull it off is because he's from two worlds. He lives in two worlds. He is the president. He's the most powerful man in the world, but he's also from nothing. And the fact that he saw both of those universes and lived both of those universes, I felt like that it struck me. And what's really wild, and we made a conscious effort to put this in the pages of the Lincoln Conspiracy, is you see Abraham Lincoln when he's younger. And you see that when it came to, you know, he'd be riding along and he'd see the baby bird fell out of a tree and everyone would be riding on their horses. And he would stop and be like, I got to save the bird. And his friends are like making fun of him, like, come on, we got to go. You're stopping to save a bird. And he's like, listen, if I don't save this bird, I'm going to be thinking about it all night. And man, I don't care whether you're 10 years old or you're 50 years old. Sometimes it's hard to do the right thing, but someone has to. And Abraham Lincoln, over and over in his life, you see it from when he's a child to just dealing with regular people to, of course, dealing with, you know, the entire nation, is just determined to do the right thing when no one else will. And that is what really struck me. That depth of character is what struck me.
Yeah, and about that character, he had an amazing sense of humility. There was a situation, I think, where he was speaking from the back of a train, and there was a huge crowd that had gathered, as there always was, apparently, wherever he went. A lot of people really loved him. And, again, I'm going to have to paraphrase. He said, well, this is the first time we're getting to actually look at each other, and it seems that I have the advantage here.
Yes.
He realized that he was that a lot of people considered him tall and gangly and not necessarily handsome, and he was very humble about that.
He uses that to his advantage. You know, one of the things right after he gets elected is all these big hotshot politicians want to come see him, because it's not like today. There's no TV, so most people don't even know what he looks like. You know, they've seen there's photographs when he wins start to go out, but there are plenty of people who have just never met him face to face and want to take his measure. And the truth is, they're like, he's some local yokel from Illinois. He's some, dumb hick. He can't be anything. Like, I can't believe we got this guy and we didn't get Seward. Like, why do we, we got a slick politician from New York who's done this his whole life, and you're telling me we have this nobody from Illinois who's got no national experience? What are we doing? And they all go to his house, and it's it's a beautiful scene. And Abraham Lincoln walks in. He's bigger and physically bigger than everyone else. And he always goes up to the biggest person in the room and kind of like makes fun of his own height. And he just immediately shows humility to say, I don't like looking down on anyone, but I can't help it. That's how they grew me, and makes a silly, awful dad joke. But it just loosens the whole room. And everyone warms up and they realize this guy doesn't think he's the best. This guy, and look at where we are now as a culture. Remember when humility was a great American value? We've lost that. We've lost it as a culture. We need to get it back again. So, I think it's a vital part of Abraham Lincoln is to remind us of that humility.
What do you think would have happened had the plot succeeded?
Yeah, we asked that question ourselves out loud in the book. That's how the book ends. So, and you'll see, of course, all of our ideas. But, do I think that the Civil War... if Abraham Lincoln is assassinated just before the Civil War begins as it's breaking out, do I feel like someone else might have stepped in to do the Emancipation Proclamation or won the war or held us together? Do I think they would have, done things as beautifully and eloquently and come out as well? Maybe. Maybe not. Right? It just as easily could go the other way. And again, especially when you're in a hard position, you have to make a decision that's against your self-interest and for the self-interest of people you don't know who are a different color than you. But I think someone else steps up. The person after Lincoln certainly didn't. We have, and we've seen it plenty of times before. I just think that all of history potentially is different if Abraham Lincoln dies in this plot. If the Lincoln conspiracy is pulled off, I fear that all of history potentially changes in that moment. We've talked about this before, but we're a country founded on legends and myths. And the legends and myths we love most are our own. And Abraham Lincoln is not just, playing the role of the guy who frees the slaves and the 16th president, and you could put in anyone into that, and as long as he does the same thing, history stays the same. It's not like that. The legends and myths of Abraham Lincoln himself, of the self-made man, of the person who teaches himself how to read, of the person who will... walk miles in the rain just to get a book, and who will read Aesop's Fables and George Washington books. Those stories
of the rail splitter.
The rail splitter himself, right? The man who with his bare hands splits the rails. No one cut down anything like this man. Those stories are America. His story is the American story. And so without him, it's not just you slot in Seward and pray for the best. You have a completely different history and a completely different America, because you lose a hero. And as you can tell, in the years that come after it, tell me who's next. I'll give you Washington. I'll give you Lincoln. Tell me who else. Who's in that echelon? And I know people who love JFK because he was killed when they were young and he was their president. And people who love, whoever it is you love on your particular side. But no one's in the echelon of those two,
No, I think you're right. I think they deserve to be on the one and the $5 bill. No doubt about it.
Those are the best we got. And I love Teddy Roosevelt. I have, there are great presidents out there, but no one is in that echelon that those two are. And I think if we lose them, we lose a great deal of our history and our psyche.
I think you're exactly right. Well, I think you've done a wonderful job with this book. I don't think we've given up anything up. I think people are going to want to read this to find out just exactly how they discovered that plot and how it was foiled, and especially the stories of Kate Warren and the other female detective who joined that team and were integral parts of saving Lincoln's hide.
Yeah, I think the fun part of the book to me is when you get to see the bad guys, is when you get to see those bad guys and what they're planning and what they're doing and how genius they are and how stupid they are, and how all of history, you know, when we did the plot to kill George Washington, the whole plot gets foiled by a guy who whispers something in a jail cell. And I love how similarly here, the plot doesn't get foiled by, you know, just great detective work or this, you know, that's certainly a part of it, but it gets foiled by really at the end of the day, just an ordinary person opening up his big mouth to someone he shouldn't. And all of history shifts in that moment. And I love that that's how history is made. It's not just made by the big famous people on the one and the five, but it's made by every single one of us every single day, depending on the choices we make. And I love when you get to see that moment of how the bad guys get caught. And I love when at the end you see what happened to them when Abraham Lincoln, the train comes to town and Abraham Lincoln's not on it. And they're like, what? And what, come, I won't ruin this part, but like all that stuff is so exciting and so fun. And that's where the Lincoln Conspiracy to me really comes to life.
Brad Meltzer and Josh Mensch, you guys have done a fantastic job with this story. It was wonderful research. It's a real gem of a story. I absolutely loved it. I recommend it very much for our listeners here at 1001 Heroes. The Lincoln Conspiracy, it comes out May 5th, which is just about the time this podcast interview will come out as well. I wanted to thank you so much for this. Also ask you, what do you have in the plans?
So I am working on, as you know, I do a line of kids' books. So we just came out with I Am Leonardo da Vinci. We've done I Am Abraham Lincoln, I Am Rosa Parks, I Am Albert Einstein, I Am Amelia Earhart, trying to give kids better heroes to look up to. We do these illustrated kids' biography series. So I Am Leonardo da Vinci just came out, and then my love of the era is never ends. After that, we're doing upcoming I Am Benjamin Franklin, another founding father.
That'll keep you busy.
That'll keep me busy, go along with our I Am George Washington book, and we're doing Anne Frank as well. And other than that, after the Lincoln Conspiracy, I'm working on my new thriller, which is a sequel to a mystery novel that I wrote called The Escape Artist that I loved working on and has a lot of really great historical research. So the sequel to The Escape Artist is what comes up next.
I hope you all do go out and get a copy of The Lincoln Conspiracy from your favorite bookseller, and you will not be disappointed, I promise you. And Brad, it's always a thrill being able to talk to you about what you've got going on and about these tremendous insights into history that you give us. Thank you so much for what you do. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Thanks to everyone listening. Thanks to everyone who's buying The Lincoln Conspiracy out now.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.